have the ground game. We've actually built the practices that people aspire to create.
History will prove one of us correct.
Wait. You're not letting me finish, bro.
This is how you become bulletproof. Bulletproof. Bulletproof.
Craig.
What's up, Petey?
Episode 343.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Is that probably about like 343 hours of just nonstop content?
You imagine?
At least.
It's a lot. It's a lot of voices and talking and stuff. You're right. You know how I know this is that I actually was trying to create a bulletproof AI custom like GPT, mm-hmm. an LLM, and I had every pod transcribed into just text so that it could read it. And even the text file alone, you know, text files usually could be giant and they don't take up much bandwidth or much memory, but it was crazy how big it was. So,
well, I'm honored. I'm honored to be on this journey with you, providing content to our dental listeners. And when we look back at all the different people that have come into our lives through this podcast, it's pretty incredible. There's a lot more listeners than I ever thought in far reaching places of dentistry, like our conversation yesterday.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think 350 would have been the place for gratitude, buddy, but I'm just kidding.
Well, I'll reset.
You'll resell episodes.
It. Yeah, I'll resell
but
it.
Actually, I was at the Hinman this weekend. I went down there to have a couple meetings with some people real quickly, just bang in, bang out. And you know, it was shocking to me. I actually had two people who came up and just said kind of what you said, like my career would be much different. Maybe my life would be a little bit different if I hadn't kind of found this pod and blah, blah, blah. So thank you what you do. So it's always really cool to hear that. Right. And, it takes a lot for someone to come up in the wild and say that, you know, it was for me when I would do that with, I remember meeting some people in dentistry years ago and it takes a lot of gumption to like get it up and be like, I don't want to bother them or whatever, but like, it's the oxygen, man. It's the oxygen that makes you keep on keeping on.
Yep.
Let's discuss something. Do you have any updates on your end before we jump into the topic for today, which is all about enrolling more dentistry? And I'm going to kind of give you, you don't even know the syllabus or the curriculum I have today, but, I like it that way. Cause you're good on the spontaneity. No, you're good on the spontaneity. I mean, look, you're a master at verbiage. You're a master. I mean, that's why I call you the dental whisperers because it transcends all things. You're great at hard conversations and all these things. But anyway, do you have any announcements? Anything for?
No, I'm excited to be speaking tonight at Nova Southeastern. So by the time this is aired, I've already completed the lecture. The lecture is kind of reminiscent of a last pod, an upcoming pod that'll be released by the time this is out, called 5 Things That Dental School Should Have Taught You But Never Bothered To. But it's a different top five.
Because we recorded that, which is now had been, by the time this one comes out, it will have been published. So, so cool. That's good that you went a different direction
about that. Yeah. And,
I think the audience is different from where you're going to speak to Nova, right?
Yeah. I think there'll mostly be dental students there, right. But there should be a lot of recent grads. And I'm actually going with, Alfredo from my office because he's been through the thick of it. He's had a whole bunch of really shitty associateships and gotten screwed over, and he's going to bring a different perspective because I've never really gotten that end of the dental spectrum. But I'm excited about it. We're also just, I don't know if you know this, but we have a student discount rate for the summit. So
what is it?
Off the top of my head, it's in my slide presentation. I don't know. I guess I'm pretty bad about that. I should find out what it is, but it's we have a student discount. We'll put it in the show notes. So it'll be below, but it's a hard cost of what the hard cost is. So if you're currently enrolled in dental school, you can go ahead and use that student discount.
Did I ever tell you about my one and only lecture at a dental school?
I think you might have.
Yeah.
I think you might have. Yeah. I don't think it went well.
I burnt the bridge for sure.
I'm planning on kind of burning the bridge too, by the way.
But it actually is kind of funny in life. I was very polarizing, not intentionally. I think I was in a bad place in my life, quite honestly. I was very polarizing, and I think in polarization, people can be highly repelled or highly attracted. And in this instance, it actually gained me, which I thought I shit the bed and just, you know, was a complete, anyway, it gained me like three partners in the process in hindsight.
No way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because it attracted thoroughbreds. I mean, just to give you some context, what happened real quickly, I was, you know, my hair was on fire clinically. I was asked to come speak to the dental students, and it was a room full of about 150 at MCG or whatever they call it now. And I was sitting there, Craig, just worn out, you know, stressed. I think Brax had just been born, you know, so I was stressed emotionally, family, clinically, everything. Partnership was falling apart. Anyway, so I'm there, right, bud? And I'm trying to lean into these students. And I remember there being like not a head looking at me. Everyone was down on their device in their laptop. Like I could have just been like the cricket, and I could have just said like, fuck you, San Diego, and no one would have raised their head. And so finally I just stopped and paused. And I said, after like 10 seconds, no one looked up, and I was like, what are y'all looking at? Because I assure you, whatever I'm saying is way more important than what you're looking at. And if you don't want to listen to me, I'll just go home because I don't need to be here. Y'all need me way more than I need you.
Oh, my God. Classic Peter Bolden.
Uh-huh. And it was like, and it was immediately this divide in the scenes. Like people who wanted, came in full attention, like actually came and sat up and sat in the front row. And then the people in the back that was like, I can't believe he talked to us like that. Right. So anyway. That's another, yeah.
I would love to see that. I will not be doing that tonight.
No. It's not recommended. No, I probably have zero Yelp stars, by the way, as a lecturer.
No, that's not true. My plan on polarization is the very fact that I asked the guy who put me on, John Michael, and I said, listen, I went to dental school 100 years ago. And 100 years ago, there were some teachers, very, very few, I could count on one hand, who loved teaching and loved dentistry. Mm. But most that I met hated dentistry and had no other alternative but to teach.
Interesting.
Is that the case today? He says, yeah, unfortunately. So I'm going to call that out. So there, yeah. I said, listen, bring instructors, but they need to hear.
Yeah, you won't get invited back either with that dialogue, yeah,
okay.
By the way.
It's okay. It'll be one time. I'm not being sponsored. Yeah, listen, it doesn't matter. If I can add value, it's going to be helpful, but I got to call it what it is, but because we're in school and we're taught by people who many times hate the profession. So they need to hear that.
You're sweeping in broad brushstrokes, as my friend Craig Spodek says.
Speaking of Craig Spodek, the code for the Bulletproof student discount, what do you think it would be? What would make sense?
Student 50, something like that.
How about BP student? BP student. So,
and if you're not a student, we will verify this shit. So don't try to scam us out of your
That's a good idea. Hey, Dr. Jones, you look about 60. Yeah. So how are you?
How's the class of 2025?
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway, right. Let's get into it.
Speaking of Summit, though, it's awesome. Things are rolling. We are, you know, it's funny how you have this massive wave of registrations, like not last minute, but the 2 months prior. Room blocks, if you've registered and you haven't gotten your dang room, get it, because the room blocks are about to be squashed, and they are cheap right now, and they will be not like cheap.
Under $200 or something.
Yeah, and they will be not cheap when the room block expires.
Or you'll be like my buddies and I had to stay in an Airbnb in the Austin one. That was not fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. You lose the experience. You know, as much as I like, you know, hotels kind of are a drag, but you do lose the immersion if you're staying off site. And I've tried that a couple times, Craig, in my CE life, in my quest for as many hours as I could put together, right? I wanted to get my fellowship in this and that, and I would just bolt on CE. And in my quest for that, I was like trying to, I'll just stay here and minimize that. And I would lose some of the immersion, the activity, the pool talk, the cocktails, all that stuff. Oh. Anyway, okay. Without further ado, you and I together have, when did you graduate dental school?
1998. So,
Let's just call it 50 years between the two of us, right? Of collective dental exposure. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, okay. That's about accurate.
So obviously we both were highly clinical, you know, and I think you and I both really focused on, in our careers, on our come up. I think you and I both realized that in order to be an entrepreneurial dentist, you really need to become a master at enrolling dentistry as the solo provider first, right?
100%.
Okay. Because without that, the chops to do it, how can you teach? Going back to your conversation tonight, potentially.
Yep.
Right. If you haven't done it, it's hard to teach. That's why you and I have issue with, you know, some of these consultants who come into dentistry from other industries. And it's like, wait a second. I mean, I'm not saying that you're not qualified to teach that, but like, you don't have the scars that you don't know the same struggles. Okay. So put a pin in that. So I think you and I both were very aligned in that enrollment was a challenge and we wanted to get better and better and better because that made us become better dentists. It's more fun when people are saying yes to your treatment. People say yes when they understand treatment. People say yes when they feel comfortable in treatment. People say yes when they understand the benefit to the treatment or the money that they are about to part with, right? And yep. I think from a top-down view, when you look at it like that, it really helps you understand the why behind why you should become a student of the art of enrollment.
Yes. And there, by the way, Pete, I'll say it a lot and I'll say it again. There's a lot of dentists out there that are phenomenal. They can run circles around the greats that everybody knows about. But they don't.
You mean hand skill wise, right?
Hand You're saying skill phenomenal. Wise. Yeah, phenomenal results. But they haven't mastered the art of presentation and enrollment, and they don't get extraordinary movement in their career. And on the other side of the coin, there's people who are masterful enrollers and they don't have the hand skills. So it's weird in dentistry, and we say this all the time, there's a trifecta. You need the hand skills, you need the personality/enrollment communication skills all in one bucket. And then the third, you need to be able to diagnose and see the work, see the vision of what can be done. And
so without that is the point.
You're kind of a three-legged table without that, or two-legged table, I should say.
I completely agree. So you bring me to point number one. So I'm going to go over, this is kind of in as chronological order as possible. There's really so many facets to enrolling dentistry, and I know you and I are about to expand on some, but I'm going to try and keep it somewhat chronological until you bring up the first point, the comprehensive diagnosis, right? It goes without saying that there should be comprehensive, like this isn't how to diagnose. You should know to be able to pick out disease and etiology, things like that, right? You should be able to see what's happening and be able to, but the presentation of such, right? So the comprehensive diagnosis is one thing, but the delivery is another. And saying more, this is something I want, if you gain nothing else from this pod and you're listening to this, saying more in your consultation exam does not mean comprehensive. Right.
I agree.
Okay. Meaning like being there more, like there's not a direct correlation from the time and the amount of explanation that you do to the enrollment. Hey docs, how many times have you gone to a meeting only to come home to be served with a bunch of friction on all the things that you learned, right? The team didn't participate in the education that you got. Therefore, now you're coming home and the team is saying, hey, just give them till Thursday. It'll go away. So why not flip that on its head, right? Why don't you bring your team to the Bulletproof Summit? It's going to be in June 14th and 15th, where you're going to learn and innovate with your team. You're going to create massive alignment, and I promise you it's where the rubber is going to meet the road. So join us again, bulletproofsummit.com, and we'll see you this summer. Have you ever, and this is a question for you, Craig, in your come up or when you were a student of such, or when did you ever record yourself in a consultation or appointment?
I did, and I've used that for doctors that I've trained with as well. I've used that.
You know what? That surprises me about you. I was expecting for an introvert or an ambivert like myself that, yeah, that's part of what you got to do to kind of become a chameleon. You got to, you know, train yourself out of that. But for you, that kind of surprises me as a gregarious extrovert, people person, good with verbiage. That surprises me that you went to that level of granularity and said, I'm going to film myself.
No, I didn't. I never filmed myself. I just put my phone down in voice record mode.
Okay. That's still good. So same kind of thing.
Yeah.
But to the same degree, like maybe it shouldn't surprise me. Like, you know, Tiger Woods got recorded in his golf swing, you know, like everyone who quote unquote puts himself out as great continues to be great by auditing the things that they do. And so you never get to that point of mastery. Right. And so I think if you're not comfortable with your presentation or you get sweaty back or you whatever, recording yourself is a great hack. Because as cringy as it is to watch yourself and listen to yourself, it's also great to be able to say, you know what I should have said there is this. You know what I should have done there is this, right? And that's the only way. Otherwise, you're just operating in this silo of getting feedback from people around you. And guess what? The patient's never going to tell you that you offended them or did something wrong. They're just not going to enroll. And also, the team is not going to.
Yeah, because the treatment coordinators, they don't tell you.
No one's going to tell you that. You write their paycheck. Like, right? You're the apex. You're the king of the kingdom or the queen of the kingdom in that environment. And it's existential threat potentially for them to give you feedback.
Well, it's also uncomfortable for them to give you feedback. I was had a long conversation with one of my treatment coordinators today, who's just not giving the appropriate feedback to the doctor. So the doctor doesn't have the right level of intel, and there's a bias. They think they're doing well. Like when you and I ask dentists, how is your case presentation? What's your case acceptance? It's always 100%. Everyone accepts it. So there's no intellectually honest conversation to just say, what is the actual percentage? So I'm surprised people didn't even listen to this podcast, because most dentists actually think they don't need help in this.
Yeah.
And they're not, they don't listen to the
patient. Well, I think if you boiled it down, like, right, Craig, we have the benefit of seeing the dentist beat the chest, and then we have the advantage of seeing there being vulnerability as our relationship transpires with them and through teachings of the mastermind. So if you get to see the breakdowns in vulnerability, and I think, like we all do that. I think we all beat our chest and say, oh, I'm 100%. But like, here's the interesting part. Anyone who tells me, if I told you, Craig, if you had just met me as a dentist and I was like, psh, I'm 100%. What would your knee jerk reaction?
You have no idea of the truth.
Okay. That's what, yeah,
that would what, be what, my knee jerk.
What my knee jerk honestly goes to, you're underdiagnosing, you're underpresenting.
Yeah. You're like running an extraction clinic in rural West Virginia, and of course they need you. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no one. I mean,
but even so, I would still think you're unaware of your optics. It's like when someone says they have 80% profit, I'm like, there's something wrong.
And until you track that, and like going back to Pearson's law, until you track it, report it, there's no way to improve it, because you just think, like, what is your sentiment about how you are as a presenter? I'm really good, so I must be 100%, right? Until you track it, you're just throwing darts in the dark. Okay, so that was actually one of my items, is like, shoot for about a 65% acceptance rate in your accepted treatment versus your proposal. Okay. And the sweeping caveat here, I don't want to get any of this. Remember when dentistry used to be like, you shouldn't sell dentistry and over this and over that and over diagnosis. The blanket statement here is, this is ideal, comprehensive dentistry. This is not proposing something to juice your money or whatever like that. This is just, we're just talking the clinical of it. Okay. I want to make sure that people hear me loud and clear on that.
Can I say something, just because I don't know the chronology of what we're going to go through?
Sure.
And you might have to put a pin in it, but I believe it's incumbent upon you as a dentist to tell people exactly what's going on. If patients know what you know, and it's impossible for them to do that because you went to 4 to 8 years of schooling for it, but if they can understand what you know, they'll tend to make the right decision for themselves. But if we don't communicate properly and thoroughly and tell them about all the problems, not just what's going to affect them today with obviously the front tooth that broke, because they can all see that, but the ramifications of their bite and the perio and all that other stuff, the stuff that's going to affect them 5 to 10 years down the road, we're not doing our job.
Amen. So, like, who would argue with that?
I just wanted to say that, because a lot of people are like, well, you know.
But Craig, let me tell you something. You know why people stop short of that? I think every dentist in here would agree with that. Yeah, of course you should. But
it's
why
a sweaty
do people
back conversation? That's what
why
it
do
is.
Well, it's not even sweaty back. Why do you think dentists pull up short on that and be like, oh, that's for next time conversation. That's for next time. Why do you think they fall short?
Fear of rejection.
Okay.
Number one. And they want to be liked. So, okay. There's a certain expectation. Patients come in, they're clueless about the level of disease they have. They come in for whitening and they've got like subgingival calculus everywhere, and some teeth are depressible into the socket with mobility. So you're like, I just went to my dentist in New York and they said everything's fine. And then you're sitting there like, and you have to say, listen, I'm really sorry that I've got bad news to tell you. Mm-hmm. But I don't want this to come out of left field, because, I know you had a trusted relationship, and I don't know what you were like when you were seeing him, but the changes that we're seeing today, the things that we're seeing today require me to tell you some bad news. Mm-hmm. And you're actually, it's a loving, it's a sweaty back conversation. Just like a treatment coordinator telling a doctor, like, hey, you're leaving me to sell this case and it's all cold.
Yeah.
You're leaving this FMR proposal. The patient doesn't even know they need an FMR. So it's a sweaty back, difficult conversation, but it's truly caring to tell people, hey, you've got issues. You've got this stuff going on. We can fix this.
There you go. That's what I was about to say. So it's the caring part is like, hey, this is bad, blah, blah, blah. But ending with, but don't worry. This is not hopeless. Because so many people walked in and was like, oh my God, I thought it was hopeless. Like, no, you're never hopeless. First step was crowned. You're here.
Yeah.
And this may be a long journey and there may be lots of steps.
What you just said is very important. I know I'm getting excited. You said the first step is that you're here. What do most dentists do? Make them feel guilty.
Shame.
Shame. Why have you haven't been to the dentist for 7 years? Like, what do you expect? Yeah, you know, be true to your teeth. Your teeth will be false to you. Like, bullshit. No. The first step, why has it been so, well, first of all, I want to congratulate you for being here today because I see it's been 7 years since your last dental visit. So great job taking the first step and taking care of yourself. Just a quick question, Mr. Jones. Why has it been 7 years? Were you afraid? Was it money?
Yeah, and no judgment. I just want to understand what's happened in your life kind of thing.
And guess what, by the way, sometimes people say it was money, but my aunt just died and she left me $1.6 million and said, fix your teeth. Well, Mr. Jones, don't worry. It's not $1.6 million, mm-hmm. but that's great news. I'm glad you told me that. So now with that level of understanding, I can design the very best care for you versus if you told me I only have $2,500 to fix my teeth and we may have to rely upon removable options for you. With enough resources, we can fix your teeth just like God created them that they don't have to come out at night. Or maybe it was fear. Thanks for telling mm-hmm. me that, Mr. Jones. I'm really happy that you told me it was fear. Many people are afraid of the dentist. I myself get nitrous when I have a cleaning. Totally get right. it. The good news is we have blah, blah, blah. But if you don't ask those questions, you're not going to get ahead.
So good. So good. And look, and this is another part in where I think, and I know I harp on this, I feel like a lot. I feel like over the 350 episodes, I've talked about this a lot. And this is where I think you can become, in 60 minutes, you can become 10 times more the empathetic dentist. In 60 minutes of study. And this is by watching some YouTubes on body language.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go take a break while you talk about this.
That's it, bud. I mean, okay, no. I'm not going to say I'm not going to say what the motions are, but it is.
Yeah, I have just an ability to tell when people are uncomfortable. It's a gift.
Look, 80% of what is said is nonverbal, right? And I told my kids that on the way to carpool the other day. I was like, it's the tone of your voice. It's the inflection. It's the comedic pause or the non-comedic pause in your voice. It's the delivery. It's your body language. It's all the things. It's not the words so much. And so, like I always give it back to poker, Greg. I was like, you know, I used to like to play Texas Hold'em. I played it with my buddies all the time. And so constantly you're looking for the tell in poker. You're looking for the tell so you can find the advantage, right? Are they lying? Are they trying to, you know, are they holding pocket aces? What are they doing? Or are they going to try and bluff me? And you're looking for the tell that they do every time that they get uncomfortable or they're lying or they're, you know, whatever. You get it. People, women, men, usually will have the same tell. In dentistry, we have to acknowledge, the first thing is acknowledging that dentistry is a really shitty place. It's scary, not shitty. It's a scary place to be for 95% of the population. Okay. And so having empathy and making them comfortable, mitigating that uncomfortableness for them will give you the massive advantage in the enrollment. And so looking for the body language, and then because no one will say, hey, slow down, I'm uncomfortable. No one is going to say that to you. What they're going to do is shake their head. I agree. I hear everything you're saying, doc. Sounds good. And get the hell out of your office.
Yeah.
They're never going
to
stop you.
And then actually write you a poor review that the doctor didn't listen to any of my concerns. Yeah,
didn't listen. So you look for those tells and say, hey, like for example, Craig, if you were in my chair, right, and you all of a sudden started grabbing your beard or your neck or something, being like, yep, I got it, doc. I'd be like, hey, let's pause for a second. You have any questions about that? I'll make you comfortable or give you a break or, you know, whatever it is, right? Just picking up on the idea that you need some time to process it or you need to understand this a little bit more.
And also understanding the timing too. So if the more questions you ask, when I see newer doctors in my office and they haven't been really trained yet and they come to me and they say to me, hey, help me design this treatment plan for this patient. And I say to them, okay, so what's most important to the patient? And they look at me with a blank stare. I'm like, what was the most important thing to the patient? Like, what did they say? What was the reason for them coming? They haven't been here in 8 years. What was most important? They have no idea. So really what you're doing is you're saying a patient walks in and said, I'm homeless. I need a house. And then you get, gotcha, buddy. And then you go to your computer and you start looking and you're designing 9 bedrooms and 15 bathrooms and a jacuzzi. And like, what type of house did you want? Because dentistry, and I'm not trying to be simple or crass, but it is possible to just get people out of harm's way by doing a couple extractions and some caries control. You could do some big core buildups and a couple extractions as one way. The only thing medically necessary in dentistry is to get people out of infection, basically. Everything so else extractions. Is up stuff. Yeah, so extractions and caries control. But if you ask that patient what's most important to you, and they say, well, I'm missing some back teeth. I really want to function. I really want to chew properly. I don't find myself chewing. I am embarrassed of my smile. And oh, by the way, in 6 months, in April, I have a high school reunion and I'm recently divorced. And there's this woman that people will tell you.
Totally.
People will actually tell you if you ask them questions.
But they're giving you the why for them. And then you build around that, right? Meaning, and then you start talking to the benefit. For example, if it's the back teeth or they all, you know, want to be able to chew a steak, you don't talk about how handsome you're going to be at the end. You talk about the function, the benefit of the function.
Or if they're in extreme pain and they're literally holding their hand on their face and you're talking about veneers. I know it's very simple, but like, dude, this person's got a blown out number 30. They're in terrible pain. This is not the time to talk comprehensive dentistry.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Jones, you're in terrible pain. Let's get this acute area fixed right today. And then I'm going to invite you back.
That's a great bullet point. I should have said context matters, right?
The context
of the appointment matters.
Absolutely. If you're in pain or if you're anxious, if they're really anxious, just say, hey, today we're just going to talk. Okay. So like, let your guard down.
We're going to solve the issue today, right? Meaning the blown out, the infection, we're going to do an IND, whatever
it is. And then we invite you back. Or if you take a comprehensive set of x-rays and there's a lot going on and maybe you're just running late, by the way, maybe you have like 4 hygiene checks, never let the patient see you sweat. Tell the patient, hey, I've got a lot of information I want to review. I want to take my time to review all this stuff and really spend a good amount of time reviewing several different options. And I want to invite you back to the practice for a no charge. Most important, because every time the medical doctor says, I got to get you back in, there's a copay. They already paid for their comp exam. I want to invite you back for a no charge consultation to review options, because I don't want to just whip through this. I want to take some time. That could be a total bullshit move because you're just running behind, or it could be legit where you just see so much stuff going on. But just, I want to invite you back for a no charge consultation where you and I can sit and talk about things that
That was a great point. Honestly, I have used that in my career where your hair's on fire. You've got 4 exams to do. You're in the middle of a cosmetic prep.
And the worst thing you have is this complexity
in front of you that needs more attention. And you need to
say, the worst thing you could say is, Mrs. Jones, I've got 6 other patients right now, so let me get you back. It's always patient benefited language. Verbiage.
Amen,
I
want
to give you my own time. I want to look at your teeth for an hour and a half. I want to look at the scans. I want to print models.
This is important to me, right?
This is important to me.
I don't want to really dig in.
You need my undivided attention. I'm going to invite you back for a no charge consultation.
Amen,
if you say, I want to invite you back for a secondary consultation, they're hearing like, shit, I got to pay again. So no charge.
Okay. If you find yourself, Craig, I don't know if this ever applied to you, but if you're finding yourself answering the same question in every consultation or appointment that you do, and you feel like, God, if I have to answer this question one more time, consider recording that question or a series of questions and either putting it on your website or sending it to them. And it's like for a consultation appointment, consider sending it to them prior. And to me, this solves 2 things, Craig. A, it's, wow, that's really impressive, right? You're anticipating their question. It looks very, I'm going to hold your hand. They're seeing your delivery. They're seeing you're a kind dentist, right? It's a custom touch point. At the same time, we are busy in our practices, right? And so if you're spending hundreds of hours over the course of your career answering the same question, look for scale that's going to make it easy. After I implemented this, and actually Dr. Curry implemented this from a surgical standpoint once he came on board, the irony to this was, hey, you know, basically like, do you have any more questions? Nope. I watched your videos on the website, or I watched the videos you sent me. I'm ready to go.
Yep.
They felt empowered, right? Because they were able to process the amount of information through our videos. And the beautiful thing about it was I got to record it one time the right way with perfect verbiage and deliver it, as opposed to, oh, today I'm backed up, or, you know, I got three patients there, blah, 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 whatever, right? Not every day is a good day for what I'm saying. So that's just a little tip. Consider that if that's something that could benefit your ecosystem. Okay.
Do you know what I think the greatest predictor to case acceptance is, Peter?
Let pause for it. Don't want to give me the answer. Do you know what you think the greatest predictor?
Do you know what I believe in my heart is the greatest predictor to a patient saying yes to a doctor? Hey, everybody. You know dentistry is a team sport. We all learn individually in silos. The doctors go to their CE, the assistants go to some other thing, the office managers go to somewhere else, and hygienists, etc. This is a great opportunity for everybody to learn at the same time and be on the same page so that you don't leave with a bunch of useless knowledge. You actually learn to implement the stuff you learned. So join us June 14th and 15th at the beautiful JW Marriott Camelback Resort in Scottsdale, Arizona. Go to bulletproofsummit.com and register you and your entire team. You will not be disappointed that you did so. See you soon, guys. The greatest overriding, the thing that cannot be overridden.
The confidence of the doctor. I don't know.
The confidence is one way of looking at it. So it's very, very close. The belief set of the doctor.
Mm.
So when a patient asks you, hey, doc, how much is it? What does that mean to you, Peter? Are they interested or not interested?
That's a buying question.
That's a buying question, right. So I've done this question with some of my doctors. And I say to them, when a patient asks, how much is it? What does that mean? I've had doctors in my practice say, that means it's expensive. So that's their belief. Their belief is that the world is expensive. So they can see people. And in my practice, believe me, if you look at my parking lot right now, there's Bentleys and Ferraris.
And Camrys. And
Camrys
Honda
and everything.
Civics.
Yeah, and Honda Civics. And the billionaires could have a Honda Civic. And the millionaire has a Bentley. You know, mm-hmm. So we don't know anything. But if you believe that patients, if your belief system says dentistry is expensive,
believe what you feel?
Yes, people believe 100% what you feel. So I would rather you don't listen to anything we just said, don't use any of the verbiage, and work on getting in your heart. Because when I meet a patient, I think of a patient as, what would I do for my family? And what would I do for my family? I would a family member know that if they had perfect teeth, I'm using air quotes for those that are not watching, perfect teeth, meaning absence of cavities and absence of perio. But if they had wear or crowding, I would tell that family member, hey, Sally, you're healthy today, but look at the wear on this iTero scan. Look at what's happening. You're only 38 years old. By the time you're my age, your teeth are worn beyond compare. I would tell someone that because that's what I actually believe in. I believe it's our job to point out the acute and then non-acute chronic disease.
But Craig, you are so right. If people's bullshit meters, regardless of their education, socioeconomic, whatever, people's bullshit meters are, I think, part of our survival mechanisms.
Yeah,
right.
Of course.
As just evolution kind of thing. Now, I'm not going there. I'm just saying, like, I just think that's built in. It's not like some people have it. And so I think people can smell. And so you're right. When you don't believe it, when you authentically think you're not delivering value, like, God, this $10,000 case is going to change this person's life. And you can envision and see that down the way. They're going to be able to function. They're going to be able to smile. And you can see that, and you authentically believe that. You're almost this excited and giddy for them because you've seen it right over and over again. And to your point, it may be easy for you to do that, right? You, doc listening, or whoever, but if your team or your hygienist doesn't have the same authenticity to their delivery, it seemed like a lot of money.
What about the treatment coordinator?
For example, that happens a lot with like PerioProtect. I hear that with like, I didn't want to present a $2,000 tray or $1,300, whatever it is. And it's like, you must not have dug into the science of why this creates so much value kind of thing, right?
Of course.
That's that you're just exposing yourself on. So anyway, I love that point. And I would agree with you that there is there's a high correlation to that in enrollment is the confidence of that.
I've watched a doctor that worked in my practice, excuse me, do all the wrong stuff. He barely spoke English. He had a very thick Spanish accent. He'll remain nameless. So don't name his name. And he said all the wrong stuff, but he had such confidence. He's like, I'm going to take your mandible and I'm going to blah, 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 and advance it this way. And it's going to be amazing and blah, 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 blah. And the patient's like, I have no idea what that little guy just said, but I really like him.
Yeah, but he had pizzazz and gusto to he was excited, you know?
Well, the thing is complex treatment planning is about leadership. Complex case presentations about leadership. When someone walks in, you have a broken crown. I'm going to fix the crown. That's not leadership. When your mouth is totally falling apart and you're describing the future, that's saying, come with me on this journey where your teeth are going to look good. You're going to have self-confidence and you're going to regain your chewing capability. It's the
but
future
Craig,
looks
that's
bright.
Storytelling. Would that's you not agree?
Yeah, storytelling. But it's leadership. It's like, come with me as I hold your hand and take you to the promised land.
Yeah, as I'm your guide, you're going to become the hero. Like, this is all the things we teach in the summits.
Everyone's going to love you. Everyone's going to love you.
Wait till
you when you have the confidence of your new smile, life will be so much better. Because right now, as you're even talking to me, John, you're covering your mouth. I don't know if you're upset with me or if you're just embarrassed of your teeth. People don't know. But when you cover your smile, when you stop smiling, people think that's an aggressive move. So you're living a life not really expressing yourself because you're handicapped. You're dentally handicapped. Come with me on this journey.
Okay. This is so good. Honestly, I'm looking at the time. I was like, man, we are action packing this. Okay. So the other thing is
you didn't give me an agenda.
Love it. But the spontaneity is working beautifully. Had you prepared,
you're working me.
So what else do dentists do when they get uncomfortable or
they go dental?
They go dental. Thank God. Yeah, we have been together a long time. They go dental, yeah. Right?
Oh, that was sweet. I'm going to notate it, the time that you said something.
They go dental, right? They start talking technical. I'm uncomfortable. I'm backed into a corner. I went this way with this treatment plan. So let me just start speaking technical and that will show that I know what I'm doing, right? That'll be my prowess. As a dentist, look how intelligent I'm speaking about gross debridements and PDLs and cingulums and shit like that. And the patient's going to do just what you're doing right there, Craig. They're going to put their hands on their head. Mm-hmm. They're shake their head like they understand what the hell you're talking about.
Yep.
Right. Meanwhile, all they want to ask you is, are those toes on the screen in front of them?
Yep.
Right. Of their x-rays. So resist the temptation. I mean, look, sometimes you have to go technical. I'm not saying don't. But don't treat your patient like your colleague.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let me think if there's anything else. Okay. So you talked about dental speak. The beautiful thing about today's day and age is we can use technology to help us. Right? I think there's so many more cool ways to enroll than I think when you and I were in the apex of our clinical career. Like really, it was like the Dignident was the cool thing, right? I mean,
oh yeah, I know, so silly.
Well, it must be true. But even then, it was like, well, must be true then, right?
Yeah.
But like looking at
the Dignident
AI,
still out, by the way.
I don't know, bud. That's a good question. But looking at like thinking about like Pearl AI and thinking about like some of the smile simulations and thinking about like using the 3D. X-rays of CBCTs, like don't go too deep into it, but like sometimes imagery, you don't need to say much when you have imagery or technology. Saying more does not equal better is where I'm going with that. And so leveraging technology, if you feel like you are weak or you are an introvert or an ambivert like me, then leverage technology until you're comfortable, until you've audited yourself over the past, 30 consultations and been like, shit, I'm going to nail this. I'm going to become a master at this, whether it kills me or not. So anyway, that's a cheat. I feel like technology is a cheat code.
Well, there's a halo effect on it. Like people that scan their patients have a higher treatment acceptance rate, scan and show the scan. I'm talking about like a STL file, like just a visual scan of their patients have a higher acceptance rate of all treatment. There's a halo effect. And by the way, Dignident is still available, which is interesting.
So Dignident is still available. You're Googling on the fly.
Yeah.
Okay.
I looked at it. Yep.
So my next tip is never, ever talk to a patient in a supine position.
Oh, yeah.
And that seems like an, oh, yeah, duh, Craig, yeah, to you. But it's uncanny the amount of conversations, right? We think that it's inconveniencing the patient to put them up and then to put them back down and like all this movement. And you want to talk about putting someone in a vulnerable position, lay them flat on the ground and you talk over them. Right?
Yeah.
Especially about something as scary as dentistry. Like, let's figure out all the things we can do to not make this work today. Let's put you down on the ground. Let's put you back. Let's put some stuff in your mouth. Let's put a bright face light in your eye like you're being interrogated. And then let me tell you about the scary stuff I might be proposing to do.
Yeah. No, I know. I grew up in a dental household, and having dental work for me is very anxiety ridden. You know, it's very real for me.
So like, that's just a duh, no brainer. But like, that goes into the presentation to Craig. If you remember that me and Sharissa did the live demonstration, and maybe I'll save this to last, about the kind of the trust transferring, the handoff, the patient handoff, making sure that, and really the benefit is making sure they're comfortable all the way through the life cycle of their visit. And I'll unpack that a little bit more, but the live demo is more informative, obviously, at Summit. So come and see that. Never talk to a patient in supine. Okay. This is where you and I may differ a little bit.
Consult room.
Yes. How'd you know? I knew it. Yes. So I am of the mind. Let me tell you where my mindset is, and then you can explain where yours are. And I think it's great that we differ on something like this. I believe that anything sub $5,000 in treatment presentation should be done chairside.
I agree with that.
Oh.
Yeah. I agree with that.
The treatment rooms are, it's just another, treatment rooms are very valuable, especially when you're want to get out of that clinical environment into an explanation, show more pictures, right? Use financing, things like that. Treatment offices have obviously a high value. Every one of my offices has a couple offices.
I call them consultation rooms.
Consultation, yeah. Whatever. Right. Right. That's where you make it happen. I think there's a stigma, and I think the car sales people ruin that kind of consultation for the world.
Yeah. Right?
We know that when we drove the car and we did the test drive and we met the salesperson, that we were going to be now put in the hot box of what's it going to take to get you in this car kind of thing. And I think there's a stigma associated with a door coming in, a different door that's not clinical, and closing the door. People are like, oh shit, here comes the pitch. Not saying it doesn't have a place, Greg. I'm just saying that it shouldn't be reserved for every single procedure. When you've already got the person very, very comfortable, either from a treatment perspective, they've already kind of nestled into their chair. You know, you've got the spa accoutrements around them and they're comfortable there. Now you're going to disrupt that and put them in a completely different environment. So be careful with that. It might be an unnecessary movement is all I'm saying. Now you go.
Well, so I agree with you that the consult room could be appeared like the closing room if it was introduced at the closing time. So in our office, patients, that's where they sit and meet first. So they greet the doctor, they meet the hygienist, they go over their medical history in a private room, because I know the operatory is not a very safe space for many people. I know we live there, so it feels good to us, but it doesn't feel good to them. So they meet that treatment coordinator, they leave, they depart, go to clinic, and they come back and check out there. So if this is routine, is how was your visit? It's 286 for the new patient welcome package, rah, 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 see you later. Or doctor comes in and says, hey, a lot going on, I want to bring you back for no charge consult. But it's not that you just go to this brand new space for the close. And I also, you know, the closing, I think one of the things that pisses people off about the car experience is no one can control the outcome. You have a developed relationship with your salesperson, which would be equated to the treatment coordinator in our ecosystem. And then there's this magical Wizard of Oz behind somewhere, the sales manager.
Let me go check with my manager.
Yeah. Hey, can you do it for 25 cash? Let me go. And they leave you there. Mm-hmm. So it's like, can you do 27? Let me go
back
again.
What is the psychology with that? Because it's not... Like, what is that? I've always
car buying experience is so broken. It's terrible. I mean,
what is this like? There's obviously they obviously think that that's the successful way to do it. Let me leave them squandering in their decision. Like,
I think probably what it is, Pete, and I've thought about this before, is you want to bond with your salesperson, and your salesperson
they're an advocate.
Yeah, Yeah, listen, I'm a good at bat for you. I'll talk. My sales manager told me this.
It's us versus them.
Yeah, yes. Like, come on, we can get it done. Like, I'll go see, you know, listen, I pushed really hard. I went to bat for you. They'll do it if you do the tire and wheel package. I mean, this is what it is.
Yeah, you but do the extended warranty and you got a deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you financing or paying cash? Like, yeah. What?
I actually think they don't even go to the sales manager. They just take a liberal in the dealership and come back like, I went to
The Wizard of Oz is literally a guy this tall, like, yeah, sitting back.
I went to the sales manager and, you know, talked to him. Meanwhile, I just went and grabbed a coffee. But no, I think that if they meet the treatment coordinator and the treatment coordinator is really a treatment advocate, like meaning I'm here to advocate for your care. And funny enough, I've had like an hour and a half of conversations with our TCs today in our offices because they're like, you know, in our office, they're like, you know, I want to talk to Dr. So-and-so, but I'm afraid to talk to them. Like, listen, that's your job. Your job is to advocate for the patients. And but they're like, who am I to talk to them? I'm like, you're a badass. You should talk to these doctors. I'm in it today. I'm in you the are, thick. Dude. I love
it. That's good. So the, I'm going to put up a little, as we close today.
A Venn diagram? A Venn diagram? You love saying that.
I've never said Venn diagram in my life.
I think you love that. Let me see what.
I think you're wrong.
How do you spell Venn diagram?
V-E-N-N, but I've never said that.
See, the fact that you know how to spell it, yeah, I'm calling bullshit. No. You know what you're saying.
Hey.
Venn diagram. V-E-N-N uses overlapping circles. Just do one. Whip one up, Peter.
It's not a Venn diagram.
I know. It's probably something similar. Pull it up.
No.
Now you're insecure. You don't want to pull it up.
I don't. I'm not pulling anything up for you. All right, Craig, I'm about to share.
I just shamed you from I've shamed your diagram.
No, because it's not where I was going. I was actually going to share the image of this.
That's a diagram. That's a Venn diagram.
It's not a Venn diagram, dummy.
It's Venn-ish. It's not overlapping dummy. Lines.
A dummy.
It's a Venice diagram. All right, I gotta go. Can we get through this?
Why? People getting value. What do you have to go?
No, I'm just getting all giddy in my own thing.
All right, look at this real quick, right?
Okay,
and so this is what we do in our practice. And I think you guys do something very similar, but it's all based around the comfort of the patient, right? Looking at the whole life cycle through. So step one, and this goes for just a hygiene appointment, which is where our patients is the on-ramp to our practice, is typically through our hygiene.
Yep. Okay. I like this.
Okay, so step one is the hygienist communicating their findings to the patient. Okay. Now, so that's okay. I understand. Yeah, Sally, I've got some concerns here, this, that, and the other, whatever, right? So they're hearing it time number one and they're seeing it on the x-rays. They're seeing x-rays being taken. They're seeing pictures, blah, blah, blah. Hey, I'm going to go grab Dr. Smith real quick. Step number two, doctor comes in and says, and the hygienist says, hey, doc, Sally's here. You know, she hasn't been to the dentist in like 3 years and we're just so dang glad she's here, right? Kind of like you said, here's what we have found in today's appointment, right? We've got some pain on the upper left. I've got some concerns I see on the bottom right, right? There's some wear that she's uncomfortable with. And all along the doctor is listening, not saying a thing yet and just shaking his head, right? And you're saying, golly, Sally, the hygienist, or Kristen, the hygienist, Kristen, that's amazing. That's great. I think it's spot on. And now you've got a mirror. Actually, you don't have a mirror and explorer yet. Sorry. Step number three. Let me back up, Greg. Step number three is now the doctor is now going to pick up a mirror and explorer after some small dialogue and say, yeah, this is spot on. So now the doctor is reiterating kind of the findings of what was bestowed from a hygienist. Okay. So sometimes we call this the bobblehead where it's like, yep, you're spot on there. This is great. Fantastic, fine, blah, blah, blah. Step number four is now you leave the room and say, I completely agree. Let's just say for exercise sake, you're saying, I completely agree, spot on. Yes, let's get this handled. Miss Jones, or wherever I just gave the fictitious name to the patient. Miss Jones. Sally. Sally, you know, our hygienist was spot on. I really agree with these findings. We're going to get you taken care of and this handled, you know, so it's not an issue for you kind of thing. Whatever. I'm not elaborating because we're doing this in a pithy amount of time. So the doctor leaves. The hygienist then the treatment coordinator, I'm going to grab the treatment coordinator so we can make this kind of fit into your life, or she can explain it and make this work into your lifestyle, whatever it may be. This treatment coordinator comes in.
Treatment that you need into your budget without disrupting your lifestyle, without disrupting your lifestyle.
Yeah. Again, I'm trying to just go through the steps. I'm not trying to do a perfect.
I do like that. Fit the treatment that you
fit the treatment into your life, right? Make it work. I mean, I think that's the role of the treatment coordinator, is to be the, like you said, the advocate for them and to also fit it financially into their life. So step four is going to be like, hey, Dr. Smith and I found this. We agree with this treatment for the patient, Sally. Treatment coordinator is like, okay, great. I hear this. Awesome. Sally, why don't you come with me and let's figure out a way to make this work into your lifestyle, like you just said, right? Let's go into my office and we can break it down and you know, we'll go over the verbiage. But it's a series of steps all along the way. And some people will say, well, that's clunky and unnecessary and whatever. But the benefit is to the patient, making them feel heard, making them feel taken care of, and not handing them off in this vulnerable state until they feel like someone has the full context of their visit under their transfer. That's it. I now have a little bit of sweaty back, quite honestly, Craig, because I feel like I should have done better. I mean, obviously there's longer verbiage that I could expound on, which we do at Summit when we go over this live and do a demo on stage. But like for the sake of today on the pod, like I just wanted to show that there are many steps sometimes to a handoff and complex treatment.
No, it's great. It's really
anything. Good. That's a wrap, bud. That's all I have in terms of my bullet point, presentation.
I loved it. Thank you for taking the time to put it together. And thanks for luring me into some spontaneous discussion.
I love it. I think we agreed on spontaneity. Go ahead.
I think that, look, I'm blessed because one of my talents is to be able to speak from my heart. And when you can find your, for the newbies out there, you know, you're kind of faking it at first. When you become a dentist, you get your white coat, you're a doctor, you go up, buy your Mercedes, even though you really should be eating ramen noodles and chipping away at your student loans. But you want to adopt this doctor persona, and you speak like a doctor. You're like, oh, Mrs. Jones, the tooth structure and blah, blah, blah. What you have to do is you have to create your personality as an individual of service. Every patient that comes into your office, you're here to serve them. And if you really approach every patient with, if this was my sister or my mother or my aunt, this is what I would do. You will be successful beyond your wildest expectations. Because like I said earlier, people feel what you believe. If you believe your obligation is to take care of the short-term and long-term health of the patient, your level of diagnostics will go through the roof because you won't be fixing what's just right in front of you. You'll also be talking to patients about long-term effects of their care and being optimally well. Because in medicine, it's about getting you unsick. And in dentistry, it's about getting you optimally well. And hygienists have such powerful relationships because they're like the physical therapists. They're like the personal trainers. They're like, hey, you can do a little bit better. Get back in here. Your 4 became a 2 or your 3 became a 5. They constantly give you coaching. So,
This is something, Craig, like I think when you can just say, yeah, you know what? I'm probably bad at this because like I didn't do any enrollment in dental school. Patients were just put in the chair and like I didn't end up enroll anything. So like you get zero reps at this before you're out in the wild. And so like, it's cool to understand, like I'm going to suck and I'm going to stub my toe, but the quicker you can identify that and try to get, and using all the aforementioned things we said and trying to try to architect your way out of it, the more joyful I think dentistry becomes. Would you not agree, Craig?
Yeah. I mean,
it's more fun when people are like, thank you, doc. That's awesome. You know,
well, what ends up happening, the reason why so much dissatisfaction is because if we're being honest, it's the doctors are commoditizing the patients, these freaking patients, you know, the reimbursement and blah, blah, blah. And they feel powerless, but there's an option to create more value for your patients and be more value, just more valuable, whether that's treating them properly, running on time, building a facility with the best technology, hiring the best team, empowering your team. Patients really like you more when they like your team. Mm-hmm. And if you really are open about the dialogue in dentistry right now, most dentists are pissed off at their team, pissed off at the patients, pissed off at the reimbursement, and they want their patients to like them. Stop treating them. Stop treating your patients like a commodity, and they won't do the same for you. When I ask patients or friends around town, who's your dentist, and they don't even know the damn name, Like, I don't know his name. Actually, no, it's a she. I think she's by Chipotle over there. I'm like, you don't even know? What? Talk about a commodity.
Yeah,
the
right.
The minute your insurance changes, you're gone. Versus like, I went to this doctor, you know, his team was amazing. Our team was amazing.
They called me at the evening to check on me. I have their cell phone number.
Right. That's what I wish for everyone. I wish for everyone that they have patients that are raving fans, because it'll make your life better. Mm-hmm. If your patients are raving fans of you, if they love you, that's what I wish for everybody. And you can do that. You can actually create a practice that's like that.
My wish for you.
My wishing tree.
All right, buddy.
Pete, always good to see you. Yeah, wish buddy. Me luck at Nova. I hope I don't bomb like you did.
Don't bomb it like I did.
No, I don't see bomb, you, buddy. Bro. See you, bud.